Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LePonier. In this hour, mystery and two newspaper-style dramas. Later on, mystery from a news photographer's perspective on Quiet Please. But right now, a tale of true crime and mystery on The Big Story. This is the case of the unfinished love song submitted by newspaper reporter Howard Beaufay and dramatized on NBC on December 1st, 1947.
The Big Story.
Hey, you, where do you think you're going?
Get out of my way.
Oh, no, you don't. I saw you hold up that store. Give me that gun.
Get out of my way.
Give it to me.
Okay, you ask for it. Here.
Hey, why don't you look where you're going?
Get out of my way, sister, and get out of it fast.
Why, you...
And remember something for your health. You didn't see nothing. Get it?
The Big Story. Another in a thrilling series based on true experiences of newspaper reporters. Tonight, to Howard Beaufay of the Cleveland News goes the Pall Mall Award for The Big Story. Now the exciting and authentic story of the case of the unfinished love song.
Beaufay, columnist and roving editor for the Cleveland News. As such, you have the rare privilege of covering any story that strikes your fancy. And on this warm spring evening, you are going to jail. You're going to pay a visit to a murderer. So you pass through the prison gate and walk slowly down the long prison corridor, hearing the light echo of your footsteps on the stone floor. And then you hear something else. A violin playing a sad, haunting melody. The music swells, and you follow it until you find yourself standing in front of a prison cell, watching a dark-haired man coax music from a battered violin. Nick Veris, murderer.
Hello, Veris. Oh, go on playing.
No, I just do it to pass the time away. The air here snaps the strings.
Mind if I talk to you?
Got all the time in the world. Life.
My name's Beaufay. I'm a reporter from the Cleveland News.
What brings you here to see me, Mr. Beaufay?
I was at your trial, Nick. I think it's possible that you're not guilty.
Thank you.
Doesn't it interest you to know that someone thinks you didn't do it?
A lot of people think I didn't do it, Mr. Beaufay. But I've been in jail 2 years.
Well, I'd like to work on the case, Nick.
It's all yours.
Any leads for me to follow up?
Well, you might go and see Joni.
Joni?
My wife.
Oh.
Maybe she can help you. Or maybe you can help her. Not that she needs anything. She got herself a job as chief hostess at the best restaurant in town. The Belle Paris.
All right, I'll look her up.
Swell. And Mr. Beaufay.
Yeah?
Say hello to her for me, will you?
Hostess here? Oh, no, monsieur. We don't employ any hostesses at La Belle Paris restaurant, monsieur.
That, you, Howard Beaufay, say to yourself, is a funny state of affairs. So you go into conference with a phone in the city classified. And after an hour or so, you end up in a dingy restaurant on the shabby side of town. An uninspired string trio is sawing away in a corner. So you slump down at a table and wait until a pretty waitress heads your way and asks...
May I have your order, sir?
Is your name Joan Veris?
Yes, but...
I'd like to talk to you. Your husband told me to see you. I'm a reporter from the news.
But Nicky doesn't know I work here. I told him I had a job at...
I know. He sent me there to find you.
Well, he'd be upset if he knew I was working in a place like this.
I won't tell him, Joan.
Thanks. It's not that I mind. It's just that Nicky would.
Tell me about him.
I wouldn't know what to tell you.
Try.
Well, the whole thing really started when Nick was in the hospital, recuperating from a pretty serious operation. I went to visit him as soon as he was out of danger. Nick.
Hiya, Johnny.
How are you?
Wonderful, now that you're here.
Oh, darling. I've been so worried about you.
Don't you know only the good die young?
But you're so thin.
Well, I need care and love. I think you'd better make it a full-time job.
What about the hours and the pay?
Incomparable. When will you start?
Right now. Oh, Nicky, I never realized how much I loved you until I nearly didn't have you.
Oh, darling.
Nicky, I brought you your violin. Here it is.
You think I still remember how to use it?
Why not try?
What'll I play, Joni?
Guess. Of course, our song. Oh, Nicky. Nicky, I'm so happy. Now that you're well again, nothing can hurt me ever.
I'm glad, darling.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, what is it, nurse?
Well, there's a man here who insists on... Well, I mean, he just walked up and...
I'll explain the situation myself. Nicholas Burris, you're wanted in Cleveland for murder.
It happened so quickly, Mr. Beauface. One minute we were alone. Nick was playing our song to me. And the next thing I knew, he was...
He was sentenced to life imprisonment for the 14-year-old murder of a man named Frank Dando. He was supposed to have stopped him as he ran out of a grocery store he was supposed to have robbed. Right?
Yes. And Nick wasn't even in Cleveland then.
Were you married to him at that time?
No.
But how do you know he wasn't in Cleveland?
He told me he wasn't.
And you just take his word for it?
Of course.
You love him that much?
I know him that well.
Hmm. There's only one thing to do. All the evidence is old stuff, buried for 14 years. We've got to dig it up. Now, I'm willing to try. Are you?
You mean you'll help me?
Well, I don't know if you call it help exactly. I'm not completely convinced of your husband's innocence, but the only way to find out is to look into the facts.
Thank you for being honest, Mr. Beauface. What do we do first?
Our first step is the police records. Suppose I meet you tomorrow morning. We'll start looking.
All right. I'll meet you at...
What's the matter?
Nothing. It's just that... That's our song. The tune the orchestra's playing. That's Nicky's and mine. Every time I hear it, I... Mr. Beaufort, could we start looking tonight?
Tonight? Well, look, it's almost 11 o'clock.
I know, but... Don't you understand?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. Come on, get your coat.
Found anything else, Mr. Beauface?
No, not yet. Same stuff. Two witnesses said it was Nick Varys, three said it wasn't. But they couldn't point a finger at anyone else.
That's all I can find. I'll go on checking these papers here. Mr. Beauface?
Yeah, what is it?
The police report of Frank Dando killing 1924. Testimony of Louise Relic.
I don't remember that name from the trial.
She wasn't called at the trial. The testimony of this girl is that she was waiting for a streetcar when a man with a gun ran out of the grocery store that was just robbed, and she saw his face clearly.
Give me that paper. The gunman was identified as James Horvath, notorious gangster from the Flats area of Cleveland.
No, it wasn't Nicky. She said it wasn't Nicky.
You go on home, Joan. I'll call you in the morning.
Well, what are you going to do?
A little investigating on my own. I'd like to check this report and find out why that girl was never called to testify. Well, here it is, Joan. The girl, Louise Relic, was taken before the grand jury in 1924. But she refused to talk any further.
Why?
She lived in the Flats area where Harvard was boss. And she's evidently afraid of him and his gang. The deposition was no-billed.
What does that mean?
Oh, dropped, buried, dead, finished.
Oh, well, what about Horvath? Where is he now?
He happens to be locked up for murder in the Ohio penitentiary.
The Ohio prison?
Yeah, and in the same cell block with Nicholas Varys, You know, Joan, I think I ought to pay another visit to that cell block.
Now we return you to your narrator, Bob Sloan, and tonight's big story.
You, Howard Beaufay of the Cleveland News, are once again walking down a corridor of the Ohio State Prison. You've just learned that it's the same prison that houses James Horvath, accused of the murder for which Nick Veris is serving time. And as you walk, you hear faintly the same melody you heard as you walked down the prison corridor once before. Only this time, the music hurts you. It hurts you because you know the story behind that unfinished love song. The story of two unhappy people. You reach the cell.
Hello, Nick.
Did you see Joan?
Yeah.
When?
Just left her a few hours ago. Probably see her again this afternoon.
They only let me see her twice a month. How is she?
Oh, fine.
When she comes to see me, it's hard to tell if she really looks all right through that screen they have up.
She's fine, Nick.
What dress was she wearing when you saw her?
Dress? A sort of green thing, I think.
With kind of white stuff up at the top?
Yeah.
I bought that for her just before. How's her new job, the hostess thing?
Oh, it's fine.
I'm glad she has a nice job like that.
Sure.
She's helpless about little things, you know. Like always forgetting to carry a handkerchief. She always gets all dressed up to go out and then has to borrow my handkerchief when she cries at the movies because she forgets hers. Did you have any trouble finding her?
I tried to talk to the wrong gal at first and had a hard time explaining myself.
I'll bet you did. Well, how'd you find Joni?
Oh, she was over at this fly speck joint slinging hash, but I...
She was slinging hash?
Well, that is...
Joni slinging hash?
Look, Nick, I'm sorry,
She told me she got a job as hostess. I thought it was an easy job and it would make things nicer for her. I didn't know she'd have to sling food in a one-arm joint. So that's the way they do it, huh? Stick a guy away in a cell with a number pinned on his back and forget him. And then his wife. Something that just keeps living. Something that doesn't matter. Well, it matters to me. It matters to me more than anything in the world, and they can't do it. If I could break out of this place, I'd murder every one of them with my bare hands. I'd really murder this time. Johnny.
Take it easy, Nick.
I'm sorry. But my wife,
I know. Nick, she helped me dig up some news for you. We found the testimony of a girl who was standing on a street corner when the killer ran by in 1924. She identified him as James Horvath.
Why didn't the girl testify in court?
She refused to appear. The record was just forgotten.
Horvath must have been the one, then. Can anybody get him to admit it?
I don't know.
Do you think he's the killer?
I don't know, Dink.
Maybe they had a hunch about that girl when they offered me that deal.
What deal?
They told me they'd accept a plea of guilty to a manslaughter charge.
What?
Sure. That way they said I could serve 8 months and get parole.
Why didn't you tell me this in the first place?
I figured it was all water over the dam.
Now, look, Nick. I'll be frank with you. I've been following up this case because it's good human interest stuff. Up to now, I wasn't convinced that you were innocent, although I had a hunch you might be. But passing up a chance to get off with an 8-month sentence? That rings a bell with me. I'm going to talk to Horvath.
Thanks, Mr. Beaufay. Oh, and look.
Yeah?
When you see Joni, don't tell her I know about her being a waitress in that place. You know how it is. I wouldn't want to upset her.
Horvath?
Who are you?
Howard Beaufay, Cleveland News.
I got no news for you, Pencil Happy.
I just want to talk.
I got no talk for you either.
I've just been visiting a prison mate of yours, Horvath.
What you trying to do? Sell magazines?
We talked.
So?
We talked about a murder. The murder of Frank Dando back in 1924.
I ain't interested in ancient history.
Horvath, you know and I know that you committed that crime, not Nick Veris. Why don't you do a decent thing for once in your life and clear him?
When I want to hire a halo, I'll let you know.
Horvath, look.
Don't. Corvette. Look me, reporter. Get out!
Any luck, Mr. Beaufay?
Not with Horvath.
I see.
Look, Joan. Maybe Horvath isn't the only cog in this machine. Maybe we could try and pin down that girl witness. Maybe.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard.
Oh, no, no. After all, we know that her name is Louise Relic, or used to be, and that she lives in Cleveland, or used to live here, and that she was waiting for a trolley car in a street corner in 1924. So all we have to do is find her in a city of 1.25 million people, if she's still in Cleveland. I'm looking for a girl called Louise Relic. Can you tell me where I can find her?
I'm trying to locate a woman named Louise Relic who probably lived in this neighborhood. Have you any idea where she might be living now?
I heard she might be living in this section of town.
I thought maybe the superintendent might have a list of tenants back as far as 1924.
The name's Louise Relic. I hear she used to live in this neighborhood.
She moved 2 years ago. I see. Thank you.
No forwarding address, huh? Thanks, anyhow.
Never mind, then. Thank you. They'd only turn off that jukebox.
Drink your coffee, Joan. Make you feel better.
I'm sorry to be such a baby, but it's just that I'm so tired. Do you have a handkerchief? I guess I left mine home.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Here. Ah, that's better.
You didn't find out anything about the Relic woman, did you, Mr. Beaufay?
No. Gonna keep on plugging?
I don't know. I hate to give up, but it seems like such a hopeless thing to keep on tramping the streets, knocking on doors, asking questions and not getting answers. I don't see how. Mr. Beaufay, is this the only way we can clear Nick?
I'm afraid so.
All right, then. Let's go knock on some more doors. To the address that woman gave me, it should be this house here.
Look, Joan, it's late.
Oh, no, let's try this house. It's the first definite address we've been able to find.
All right.
Well, hello. Hello.
Are you Louise Relic?
Have been for some time, honey.
We've been looking all over for you.
Very flattering. What for?
May we come in?
Sure.
Miss Relic.
Call me Wheezy, honey.
Miss Relic, this is Mrs. Nick Varis.
I think you got the wrong apartment.
I don't think we do.
The door's behind you.
Look, sister, Nick Varis is in jail for a murder he didn't commit. I know he didn't commit it. And what's more important, you can prove he didn't.
Never heard of him.
Perhaps you've heard of a man named James Horvath.
Nope.
Please, Miss Relic. You're the only chance I've got to free my husband.
Look, you two, get out of here and get out fast.
But why? Why? Can't you see we've got to get the truth from you? That you're the only one who can help us.
She's afraid to tell us what she knows, Joan.
Afraid? Sure, I'm afraid.
But you do know something if you wanted to talk.
Get out of here.
Are you afraid of James Horvath?
I don't know what you mean.
Are you afraid of James Horvath because he's the man you saw shoot Frank Dando back in 1924?
I don't know what you mean.
Are you afraid he and his gang will get you if you talk?
I don't know
what
you mean.
Are you afraid if you exonerate Nick Barris, Horvath and his boys will be laying for you? Is that what you're afraid of, Miss Relic? Is it?
Yes.
James Horvath's in jail for another murder. He can't hurt you.
But he's not the only one. His gang will get me if I talk.
No one will ever know you talked except the parole board.
But they'll see my name in the newspapers, won't they?
Your name won't be printed.
Okay. I'll meet you at the parole board office in the morning.
You spend the long hours of the night drinking black coffee and wondering if that frightened promise will hold. It does. The next morning, Louise Relic tells the parole board that the man she saw running from the scene of the robbery and murder was James Horvath. Then one day, a little later, you pull your car up to a stop in front of the state penitentiary.
Nick will come out of that door over there, Joan.
At 11 o'clock?
At 11.
What time is it now?
Well, for the 10th time in the last 5 minutes, it's now 3 minutes of 11.
3 minutes. In just 3 minutes, Nick will walk out of that door. Do I look all right?
You look wonderful.
Do we have to wait in the car? I mean, couldn't
oh,
we...
Oh, come on. You wear me out. We'll walk over that way.
Oh, isn't it a perfectly wonderful day? I don't think the sky has ever been so blue, or the sun so bright, or anything so wonderful in all the world.
Why, I wonder why.
Oh, what time is it now?
45 seconds to 11, precisely.
45 seconds? Why, that's no time at all. Are my stockings seam straight?
Absolutely.
And I've got a clean handkerchief, too. Nicky gets so mad at me when I forget my hanky. But this time I put one in my... Nicky.
Come on, honey. I'll take you home.
You, Howard Beaufay, had the rare privilege among newspaper men of being able to pick your own assignment. And this time you really picked one. You helped two good people find each other again, and you got your big story. And you'd been around the pencil game long enough to know which was the thing that really counted.
In just a moment, we'll read you a telegram from Howard Beaufay with the exciting details of tonight's big story. Now we read you that telegram from Howard Beaufay of the Cleveland News.
Following his release from Ohio State Penitentiary, innocent musician in tonight's big story accepted engagement with well-known orchestra and, with his wife, left Cleveland. No one else ever came to trial for 14-year-old murder. Many thanks for tonight's Pall Mall Award.
Thank you, Mr. Beaufay. The makers of Pall Mall are proud to have named you the winner of the Pall Mall $500 Award for notable service in the field of journalism.
Listen again next week, same time, same station, when Pall Mall will present another big story.
The Big Story, on Tuned 2 yesterday from December 1st, 1947, on NBC, the first year for that series. It was dreamed up by Bernard J. Proctor, who had been reading in the Chicago Times reports of a 14-year-old murder case, and after about 30 or so stories passed through the paper on the topic, a man wrongly convicted was pardoned, and he thought it would be a good idea to bring other big stories to light. And it was a great success on NBC, running from April of 1947 through March of 1955. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now a tale from Quiet Please, called 13 and 8, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from April 26, 1948, starring the announcer of the big story, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet, please. Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called 13 and 8.
I don't remember when was the first time I seen him, I don't think. When was the fire at the Harbor Hotel? Last August, wasn't it? When the fellow jumped out the window, lit on the streetcar, got carried 3 blocks in his nightshirt? Yeah, last August. I guess that was the first time. I've seen him a lot of times since then. Well, I never thought much about it the first time. Me and this kid, Buzz, we was covering the fire. You know how it is when the hotel gets on a fire in the middle of the night. It could be a big story. You could get a shot of a guy doing a swan dive out the 20th story and get one of them prizes. Only the Harbor Hotel is only 3 stories high, and this guy landed on a streetcar, and all he got was a fractured clavicle, wherever that is. When I get the picture, only no prize. I'll tell you about it, see? There's about 12, 15 photographers there from different papers, and a lot of reporters and cops and firemen and things. Too many of the bubblegum kids with their box cameras getting in everybody's way, and once in a while getting stood on their heads in the gutter by working stiffs like me. And all of a sudden, this Buzz, he hollers, "Hey, look at the guy in the window." And I look, and so does everybody else. And everybody has got his camera aimed at the guy, and this citizen steps right in front of me. Well, you know what is a lens louse? We get them all the time. They're citizens. They want to crawl into a picture a news photographer's making, and so they get the pushes in the paper. And they're by the millions, brother, by the millions. So we got a kind of yell we yell sometimes when we see a lens louse lousing up a picture to warn off the other guy, see? We holler 13 and 8. Then everybody is onto his guard, see, and the lens louse ain't got a prayer. So I holler 13 and 8. And all the other photographers, they look around, and just then the fella jumps out the window, and I am the only guy looking, and I bang the shutter. Well, I figure the lens louse is right in the middle of the picture. He was googling into my lens. But maybe I also got the fella jumping off in the wind into the background, and we could rout out the lens louse and just have a shot of the guy flying through the air with a greatness of ease. Well, up runs Biggie Wallenstein from the press, and Ori Parks, and Lee Nittinger, all hollering and waving their cameras because they missed the picture on account I hollered 13 and 8. And I said, "Listen, I'm just trying to be a nice guy and a comrade. I missed the picture too, don't I?" And they say, "There wasn't nobody." And I say, "What do you mean, your adjective?" And they say, "There wasn't nobody, and I was just trying to draw him off the picture." I say, "There was, too. There was a guy, wasn't there, Buzz?" And this Buzz, he looks kind of funny, and he says, "Sure there was." And then this Biggie Wallenstein, he says, "If this was the old days, we'd take the plate away from you and bust it." I say, "Well, it's film, and you can't bust film." And then I say, "And besides, this is the new days, and you lay off, and maybe I'll take your face and bust it." And they swore at me, and well, the fire was out. So, Buzz and me, we went back to the office. So, we go in the dock room and I cook the film. Sure enough, I got a sensational shot of the guy skimming out of the window. And there ain't no sign of the fella I seen in front of me, the lens louse. So I say, "Hey, Buzz, that's funny." Buzz says, "Listen, Rocco," he says, "listen, you know there wasn't nobody there." And he laughs and says, "Hey, that was a pretty cute trick, drawing off them other fellas like that, Rocco." So what am I, crazy or something? I say there was a guy there, or else I wouldn't have hollered 13 and 8. And I got a $15 bonus check. Yeah, but just the same, I'll holler 13 and 8 again if I see a fella googling into my lens. Well, all right. Two more times I've seen a guy. You ever know how it is? You see a guy and you don't see him, and he looks like somebody you know. Or maybe it's because you see him every once in a while and you get to recognize him like. Well, that's with this guy. I only get to see him, see, looking through the wire thing on my camera with one eye, and I got nearsightedness in that eye a little bit. But up he pops right in front of the mayor one day while he is saying welcome to some ambassadors or something in his plug hat. And it's very quiet, and I holler out, 13 and 8! And the mayor jumps, and his plug hat falls off. And I shoot just as him and one of the ambassadors bump their heads together, reaching for it. And, oh, boy, I've got another $15 bonus. On the kind of we don't like the mayor, see? And at the next kill meeting, Biggie Wallenstein, he prefers up charges against me. He says Brother Rocco Carcioli is guilty of conduct unbecoming. And if Buzz didn't testify for me, I'd be thrown out of the guild or something. All I'm doing is trying to be a good guy. Yeah. Well, now I'll tell you about the third time. The time I got the raise. This fella, this big-time Charlie with the pinball machines, you see, he was bit by the dust. Well, they have put the finger on him, but big, and the judge says how he's to spend the next 40 years making little ones out of big ones or whatever they do down at Joliet. So it's the day when they're going to shove him in a car and take him down Highway 66 to Joliet and stuff him in the pokey. All the papers have got the guys around to make the farewell shots of the takeoff. He's been in the big can out on California Avenue. We're standing around outside waiting for the party to come out. This here Biggie Wallenstein is standing alongside me.
You're going to have a 13 and 8 on us this time, Rocco. I'm going to shove your camera down your throat.
Yeah, you and who else?
Me and the rest of these guys. I'm not kidding, too.
Well, listen, Biggie, I don't holler unless I see somebody.
You never seen anybody the last two times.
I did, too.
I'm only trying to do you a favor.
You should do me favors.
I'm just warning you.
Heads up, they're coming.
You keep your nose clean now, Rocco.
Ah, go shoot your pitches. Hey, Chief. Hey, Chief, how about it?
All right, boys. Make it fast now.
Pull up your hat a little bit, Chief.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hold it. One more.
Have him take his hat off, Chief.
Take off your hat, Dan. How's that?
Okay. Hold it.
You got all the names?
Sure, we got the names.
We shoot one while you get in the car, huh?
Okay. Come on, Dan.
And then I see this here character again, this Lenslaus. Doggone it, I say to myself, that fellow looks familiar to me. I move around so he ain't in front of me. Yeah, but he moves too. And they're just getting in the car, and somebody else is stepping up close to this big shot. And I yell out, 13 and 8!
Hey! Get it! Get it!
That's how I got the only shot at this big shot blowing a hole through the chief of police with a gun that somebody slipped on. And you know what? Biggie Wallenstein, if it hadn't have been for his camera, Biggie Wallenstein would have got his head blowed right off. Only he was holding up the camera to his face, and all it done is ruin the box and all the other shots he made. Yeah, this Lenslaus was standing right in front of me. But he wasn't in the picture when I developed it. There wasn't nobody but the big shot with his gun and the chief of police standing there with a dumb look on his hand and a hole in his chest you could choke a horse with it. And I get a scoop. And a raise. I want to tell you about this kid, Buzz, I was telling you about. We worked together quite a lot. You see, he is fresh out from college, where he was a GI Bill after the war, and Steve Trumbull is the city editor, and he hires Buzz. Well, we're getting kind of famous, see, on account of the scoops I'm getting. And, of course, Buzz is with me, so he's kind of in on it, too, and I figure maybe he's good luck. Besides, he's smart. He was the guy, for instance, that named the streetcar. You know, the killer car. You know, the car that bumped the old lady at Lake Park in 49th. Then it run away from the Mortimer member, hit the automobile with them kids from the university the very next week. Yeah, it was Buzz that thought that up. How'd you think it up, Buzz?
I didn't think it took any special genius to think that one up, Rocco.
Oh, yeah. Sure it did.
Anybody'd think of it.
I wouldn't have.
Well, you're a photographer.
I wished I could think of things.
You're doing all right with your pictures, Rock.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Only one thing, though, Rock.
Huh?
One of these days, you're going to wake up with a busted nose.
You and who else?
Nah, not me. I mean that 13 and 8 stuff.
What about it?
Well, it's been a great gag. But one of these days, you're going to pull it once too often. Some of your valued colleagues will put the arm on you.
Well, listen, I ain't kidding, Bud.
You're not kidding me.
No, there is a guy.
You mean this is the same guy? Come on. You know it's a gag.
No, it ain't. I pretty near can recognize him.
Well, how come I've never seen him?
Ain't you seen him? You said you did.
I'm your pal, Rocco.
Listen, Buzz, cross my heart. I hope you died. There is a guy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he follows me around.
Little man with a green coat.
No green coat, but he's a real guy.
Well, how come he never appears in any of those pictures?
Well, you got me.
Don't kid me, Rocco. I wouldn't kid the other guys either if I were you. I think they're getting tired of it.
I tell you, I ain't kidding nobody, Buzz.
Okay, Rock. But don't come to me for sympathy when they gang up on you.
They ain't gonna gang up on anybody.
Telephone for you, Rocco.
Okay. Hello. Hello, Mr. Trumbull. No, sir, I was just going in the dark room to develop it. Yes, sir, I sure do need a new camera. Hey, it's right here, what's left of it. Oh, no, I got the holder out and the film's all right, I think. I think I got a good shot. Sure. Oh, sure. Well, I never seen you hit me, but I think I know who it was. Biggie Wallenstein. Yeah, sure, from behind me. And I'm pretty sure it was Ori Parks on the star that jumped on my camera. No, I was laying down. Well, I just seen footprints going up and down on my camera right in front of my nose. Yes, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. Nothing. Why, sure, that was kind of a reflection. But reflection, like automatic. I seen this fella, he stepped in front of me. An automatic, I say 13 and 8. Then boom, I'm dead. Huh? Oh, well, it was a beat-up old camera anyway. Okay, right away. Yes, sir. All righty.
What's the matter, Rocco? You get worked over?
Shut up. Who's in the dark room?
Nobody.
Anybody in there? I guess not.
Hiya, Rocco. Where'd you get the black eye?
Hiya, Buzz.
Where'd you get it?
Come on in the dark room with me.
Okay. Got another scoop?
Lock it. Yeah, maybe I have.
Who smacked you?
Biggie, I think. Where's the scoop? Oh, here.
You say it again?
Say what? Set the timer there.
13 and 8.
Yeah. I seen him again. They're digging a hole in the river. How's the time?
I can't see in the dark. You mean the tunnel?
This fella got a taxi or whatever it is, and they're hauling him up with a pulley.
Pulley?
Yeah, and my friend Alenslaw steps in front of me, and I just say it, and pop, I get a clout on the knob. And I fall down, and I press the thing as I fall down. The rope breaks on the pulley, and the guy falls back in the drink. And they jump on my camera.
You mean you got a shot of the man falling, Rocco?
Why, you did if that character ain't smeared all over the film. There. It's cooked enough. You can get it in the hypo. Yeah, wrench it first. I hope that's hypo.
I turn on the white light?
A minute. Okay. Boy.
Hey, look at that. Oh, that's fine, Rocco. Terrific. Wait a minute. Pay me.
Pay you what?
Where's your guy?
What guy?
Your lens lost. It was standing in front of you.
Yeah. Hey, look here. Wait till I get the front of the light. You see? Look here.
I don't see.
See? There's his head. See?
Huh?
You see his hat? See? There's an arm, see?
Yeah, but...
He's there. You pay me.
Yeah, he's there, all right. But why do you suppose you can see right through him?
Mm-hmm. you know what? I took this here negative over to Kinsey Grill one night where I knowed I'd meet Vicki Wallenstein, and I walked in with it. Himinori Parks is getting at a table organizing some beer. I just walk over and sit down. I says, look, I want to show you something. I ain't mad, see. I just want to prove something. I just want to prove I never hollered 13 and 8 for nothing. I want you to see this here, I said. Well, see what happens when you're an all right guy? By 11 o'clock, I'm full of free beer. And Vicki Wallenstein offers to leave me hit him in the nose. And Ori Parks is all for going over to the office and getting his camera so I can jump on it. I mean, they're sorry. And the only one thing that bothers none of us is, why is the guy so you can see through him? And then Vicki Wallenstein pretty near scares the beer out of me.
Maybe the guy is a ghost, Rocco.
You know what? I am out on the thing with Buzz the next afternoon. Who is there also but Vicki Wallenstein. He gives me a big hello. I give him one. Yeah, we're pals, see? And we're standing alongside each other, lining up a shop. He borrows a flash bulb from me, just to show we're brothers and things. And he grins at me and he says, now don't holler, Rocco. And I say, why should I holler? There ain't anybody here but us chickens. And he laughs. And so we line up our shots so they won't be too much alike. And it's a shot of a coal shed where they found $34,000 in $20 bills. And I'm squinting with my bum eyes through the wire thing. And all of a sudden...
13 and 8!
And I pretty near drop my camera as I bust a standing high jump record. And listen, there wasn't anybody there at all. Nobody but me and Biggie.
I seen him, I tell you, Rocco. I did too seen him.
Yeah, crazy.
He was standing right there in front of us both.
Well, where'd he go then?
I don't know.
Listen, Bud, you wouldn't be pulling a gag on your pal, would you?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I seen him, Rocco.
Just because you think I pulled a gag on you a couple of times?
Oh, so it was a gag, huh?
Listen, you are...
I knew you was pulling
I'll
a gag.
I'll bust your neck
I'll
off.
I'll smack you down.
Back of the shop with another busted camera and a loose tooth someplace. Also, I got no picture and I feel awful.
Hey, Rocco, telephone.
Ah, shut up. Yeah? Huh? Get away from there. I ain't talking to you. Now, listen, Vicki. You what? You did. You have. You are? Holy. Yes. You know what? He's got a picture of that guy on his film. And you can see right through him. Yeah, what do you want?
Come on.
Oh, Buzz. Hey, what's cooking?
The killer car did it again.
Huh?
The killer car. You know, the street car. Ran off the tracks on the south side and killed the mailman. Come on, Trumbull wants pictures.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go again.
Come on.
What's he want pictures of it now for? The fun's all over.
Come on, come on, come on. He gave me taxi money.
Oh, well, in that case, if we ride, I... Wasn't doesn't very much. Street car blocking the street, his nose up on the sidewalk. Didn't bother it a bit. I got me 4 or 5 shots to the art department, could paint up with dotted lines and X's and stuff. And Buzz, he got a lot of stuff from the people that seen it. Then pretty soon, Biggie Wallenstein come up. Buzz is listening to the barber tell how he was giving some old guy a shampoo, and he heard bungle, 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 and the mailman comes sailing through the window scattering poster cards all over the shop. And I'm sitting on the curb drinking a bottle of ale and writing down names.
Got any good shots, Rocco?
Yeah, regular stuff.
Hey, that picture.
I don't want to talk about it.
Leave me show it to you.
No.
Yeah. Look. I made a print.
Listen, Biggie. What do you suppose this is?
I don't know, but it scares me.
Did you see anybody here?
No.
You think you and me is nuts?
You know what? I wouldn't take no bets on it, Rock.
What'd they say over the paper?
Yeah, I told them it was a double exposure.
Wasn't, though.
You know it wasn't. Hey, you think we're haunted?
I wouldn't bet on that either. Hey, look.
What?
He's a lot cleaner in your picture.
I noticed it.
Can't quite see his puss, though.
No, but there's something awful familiar about him.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Put it away, quick.
Well, what's that?
Give me a close-up of the front of the car, will you, with the number and everything?
What for?
I want it.
Bob!
Trumbull wants it, too.
Oh, well.
Oh, hi, Biggie.
Hi, Buzz. How's it?
All right. Hurry up, Rock. I want to get back.
You find out something I don't know, Buzz?
Nah. I want to meet my girl.
Oh.
13 and 8!
What?
Hey, Biggie. Come quick. That guy again. He's under the front of the car. And he's dead. Come on, Buzz.
Telephone, Rocco.
No, I'm just going in the dark room.
It's Trumbull.
Oh. Yeah, Mr. Trumbull. Yes, sir. Well, Buzz is right there with you, ain't he? He can tell you. No, sir, I ain't developed it yet. Well, I know. Well, no, sir, I sure thought there was somebody under that car when I was taking a picture. And when we went back... No, that's right. I couldn't see anybody either, but I'd have swore that... Well, I don't know. Well, I'm going to cook the film right now. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I'll call you as soon as I get it developed. Yes, sir. Hey, anybody in the dark room? Give me Biggie Wallenstein. Biggie, this is Rocco. Listen. Well, wait. I got to pull myself together. Yeah. You know that picture I took when I thought I'd seen that character under the car? Yeah. Yeah, well, in the picture, there is a guy under the car, and he's all smacked up. No, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Sure. No, you couldn't see through him this time. Well, listen, Biggie, I'm scared. Have you got a shot of the front of the car I could borrow? I gotta have it. I never missed a shot in my life. Yeah, I gotta. Send over by Kid, will you? What? No, I can't show this one to Trumbull. No, I can't. I can't show it to Buzz either. What? Listen, Biggie, I burned it up. The film, I burned it up. Well, you can see the guy's face plain in this picture. Yeah. It's Buzz.
Rocco. What the devil are you doing down here in the lobby? Where's your camera?
Why, what for, Buzz?
Come on, you're going with me. We got a feature assignment, boy.
Well, I ain't got my camera.
Go get it. Hurry up. I'll wait for you. I've been looking all over the place for you.
Yeah, but why
I'll tell you on the way. Go get the camera and a lot of film. Color film, too, Rocco, and hurry. Beat it now.
I'll meet you down here?
Yeah, I'll be right here. I gotta make a phone call. Let me talk to Steve Trumbull, Alma. Hello, Mr. Trumbull. This is Buzz. I found Rocco, all right. Yeah. Say, I want to thank you again. It's going to be a swell story, I promise you. Yeah, we're going right out to the car barns now. The killer car is waiting for us. So long.
The title of tonight's Quiet Please story is 13 and 8. It is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Murray Forbes played Big E. Buzz was played by Ed Raggy. And a variety of voices in the course of the half hour. Reporters, cops, thugs, office boys, etc. were by J. Pat O'Malley. Music for Quiet Please, as usual, is played by Albert Berman. Now a word from our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
You couldn't possibly have recognized yourself or anybody you ever knew living or dead in 13 and 8, because I invented them all myself, and any resemblance to anybody else is an amazing coincidence. Quiet Please next week is called How Beautiful Upon the Mountain.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 26th, 1948 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.